Okay, so we started the sugya of Beria on Thursday, Nachon, right? So we said that today we're going to try to finish it up. As we laid it out, is that there's three separate halachas of Beria. There's a din d'oraisa, probably a din d'oraisa of, definitely a din d'oraisa of Beria, that if a person eats a bug, even though it's fachas mikzayis, you chayv malkus for that, maybe several malkios. For that, then there is a din that is in all likelihood a din d'rabbanan related to Beria, but might be a din d'oraisa according to the Mashmalos of Tosos, and that is that a Beria ain't a petela, and that's been our primary topic. And then there's a third din of Beria that relates to bracha achrona that might not be a din at all, but if it is a din, it's probably a din d'rabbanan. But that's the issue related to bracha achrona. So today what I want to try to get through is the inyan of tolaim, of bedikas tolaim. Well, first, did we discuss what ratio of beria might become batalin? I don't know if we discussed that. So we'll start with that. Now we'll get into the inyan of tolaim, and then we'll discuss a little bit about beria as far as bracha achrona is concerned. Good. So that's what's on tap for today. It is a clear Gemara that Bittul Barov does not work on a Beria, as we said, because the Gemara asked, V'liv Til Baruba, and the Gemara answers, Beria Shiny, right? That's the whole Gemara, and Daf Kof Amud Aleph at the very top, I think the first two words of the page, are Beria Shiny, that a Beria is not going to be Bittul Barov. However, does that mean that a Beria is not Bittul in anything? Meaning, is there any amount that a Beria might be Bittul in? So most Rishonim, including Tosos and Daf Kof Amud Aleph Dibra Maschul Beria, the Ramban Tzadi Tesam Beis Dibra Maschul V'Kasav, the Ritva Daf Kof Amud Aleph Dibra Maschul V'Kasav, hold that afilu be'elef lo batel. That when we say that beria ain't a betela, it means at all. Afilu be'elef lo batel, just like we say by a davar sheyish lamatirin, and by a chatich ri l'skabein, and a davar sheb'minyin, all of the sugyas we're going to be learning coming up, that when you have something that's a davar chashuv, because it's not batel berov, it means it's not batel at all, because it's a davar chashuv. The Tosefta in the 7th parak of Yerachulin is explicit that Chatichuru Liskabed is Afilu Be'elef Lobatul, and the Mishnah Sadif Avambez lists the dinim of Berian Chatichuru Liskabed together. So it's very mistaver that whatever the rule is by Chatichuru Liskabed, which is explicit in the Tanayim, is going to be the rule when it comes to a Beria. However, some Rishonim say that there is a number where even a Beria can become batel, and that is 960, which is an odd, I mean, it's an even number, but it's a strange number to choose to say that that's what's going to create bittel. The Amshul Shlomo explains over here in Maseches Chulin that this is based on the Mishnah in the 10th parak of Maseches Trumos, Mishnah Ches. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Hora Bahadein Achbar Chad Be'elef. He talks about being mevatel an achbar, a mouse, in 1,000. And the Rash on the Mishnayis over there in Trumas writes that the reference is to a bittel of a beria, which would not literally need 1,000, but when he says 1,000, he really means 960. So the Chuvas HaRashba, Chelik Aleph, Simin Reish Ayin Aleph, as well as the Rashba in Torah Sabayus, and the Rashba in Chidushim and Chulin, Tzadi Zayin and Beis in the name of Ravid, quotes this Rash and seems to agree with him that a barrier can become batel in 960. Now, based on that, there's a comment that the Yerushalmi makes that seems to work, meaning the case was that Hora Rabbi Yossi, well, it's Yerushalmi, Yerushalmi says that Hora Rabbi Yossi ba'achbara, that Rabbi Yossi was makel by an achbar. Apparently what happened was a mouse got mixed in, and Rabbi Yossi was willing to be makel with 960. So the Rush over here quotes this and says that it's not the Pshat in the Yerushalmi, it's not at all what the Yerushalmi means. He says it doesn't make any sense that an achbar would be batel 960 for a lot of reasons. First of all, Achbara is not a mouse, it's the name of the town where Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi issued the Pesach in a place called Achbara. It has nothing to do with a mouse. That's Aleph, says Rush. Second of all, if you have a full mouse, there's no way it would ever get lost in Taharoves. you know, the whole idea would still and still be a beria. Meaning, if the mouse is a beria, that means it hasn't been squished, it hasn't been cut up, it hasn't. So it's still a mouse. So look at the whole tarovis. Find the mouse and get the mouse out of there. And then it doesn't make sense. They'd be a tarovis of yavesh b'yavesh, and then a mouse would get lost in such a tarovis. It's a highly unlikely case. If we're crushed up, it's not a barrier. And if it's intact, it shouldn't get lost. A kiranasha, I understand. A kiranasha looks just like other gidin. The Yerushalmi is not talking about anything be'en. It's talking about the tam, says the Rush, of a dag tame, which has a particularly pungent and strong tam. And that tam wouldn't go away with shishim. That would need 960. Nothing to do with the whole sugya of barrier. It's just saying, tam ki ikr, and normally when you have shishim, you could assume you don't have tam anymore, but sometimes you have something that's such a strong tam that you need much more. The Rush and the Ran point out that the Gemara, as we said, Gemara compares beria to chatichri l'skabed, chatichri l'skabed afilu be'elef labatel. So the Rush explains that if you're going to argue and say that a beria is batel, you have to say that even though we link chatichri l'skabed to a beria, it's not a dimyon gamur, it's not an absolute link. So how do we paskin? Bottom line is you have this machlokas, and what it's based on is how to read that line in the Yerushalmi of Har Rabbi Yossi ba'achbara, that it becomes batel be'elef. And at the end of the day, the Beis Yosef quotes the machlokas and paskins in Shulchan Aruch that it's never batel afilu be'elef. And that's what we assume, that it's just like chatichri l'skabed, that it's not going to be batel afilu be'elef. And that's very critical, because sometimes if you're dealing with a large salad or something like that, you could actually have elef of a teeny tiny bug. If you know the size of the bug that fell in and was very tiny, you might actually have elef. But we paskin that even the elef, it's not going to be batel, that it's always going to answer the tarotah. So now let's get to actual tolaim. So Shulchan Aruch over here in Se'if Dalid. Shulchan Aruch writes over here in Se'if Dalid that Yerokos Mevushalos, Shematzu Behem Shalosh Tolaim, HaYerokos Asurim, Aval Me'ashlokos, Mesanon Mutarim, V'chein Abasi, Yachzen V'yidkenu Mutar, that if you have cooked vegetables and you found three tolaim in them, then the yirakos are going to be asur. Why would it be asur? You found the tolaim in the stomach. When you found them, you took them out. But the whole thing's going to be asur. So this is something called that it's huchzak b'tolaim. Once you find three, then you know that there's a chazaka, that there are tolaim there. Meaning you don't say, oh, I found them, so I'm good. No, we assume that there's a chazaka, that this is infested, and if it's infested, you're not finding all of them. This is based on the Tshuvas HaRashba. It is not a Gemara. It's a Tshuvas HaRashba that when you find gimel tolaim in the cooked vegetable, it's huchzak v'tolaim. Why can't you just check further? Meaning there's no din that you ever have to throw out a vegetable. You just have to look. You just have to look for all the bugs. So look for all the bugs. Just spend some time looking for all the bugs. The assumption is that once it's cooked, you're not going to be able to find all the bugs. So that's the assumption. You can't check after it's cooked. So you really have to check all the vegetables before you cook them. In Simen Pei Dalid, the Taz writes in Sivkot and Yedzayin that only bugs that come from the vegetable themselves are included in that chazaka. But if, let's say, a bug comes me'alma, like you have an ant problem in your house or a termite problem in your house, and there's a termite in your salad, and you know that the termites don't come from the salad, the termites are coming from outside of the salad, they're just coming from the general environment around them, so then we don't have to be choshesh that they were there beforehand. The Chak Yaakov disagrees. He says, no, even a bug that's ba me'alma, you have to be choshesh that that's called huchzak b'tolaim. Meaning, huchzak b'tolaim, does that mean that it's inherently infested, that this crop was infested? Or does it mean that you just weren't shomer on this well enough since you brought it home? And that's also called huchzak b'tolaim. In Megillah Sefer and Simen Yud, he discusses if you had flour and then you made a dough, you baked challah or whatever, and then after you made your dough, you looked in your flour bin and you noticed tolaim in the flour. Now you didn't notice it when you were making the dough. You only find it afterwards. So if you find three ants, it would depend on the machlokas Taz and Chak Yaakov. He suggests that if you assume like the Taz, that only bugs that are inherent to the item itself. So how would you say it goes? That if you assume that it's bugs that even come May Alma, that would relate to the Chazaka. How's it Tali? How do we put it together? So the something in order, so then the assumption that it was always infested, as opposed to something could have right, Huchsak v'Talayim could apply to something that, so right now it's Huchsak, because right now Talayim came. Right. Right, Lachara would depend on that, right. Yeah, so it's not really you would have to know what kind of bug you're looking for in the flower. So I don't know, gotta look back at the Megillah Sefer and see why it's Tali. Lachara, it shouldn't be Tali. It should be Tali what kind of bug it is, right? Lachara, it shouldn't be Tali in Machlokas Taz. If it's the kind of bug that infests a flower. Not sure. Okay, gotta look back at the Megillah Sefer. Okay, put that one on hold or look it up and let me know. One of us will look it up. Okay? So Megillah Sefer Siminyan. Okay, let's try to take a look at that. Limudei Zuchus, for those who eat bugs, meaning, you know, there are a lot of people that unfortunately aren't necessarily so super careful about infestations and about making sure that their vegetables are properly checked. So are there any sorts of limudei zchus? So let's go through six potential limudei zchus. First of all, Shulchan Aruch and Sif Aleph, paskins afilu be'elef lo batel, but, as we just pointed out, some acharim suggest that when it comes to bugs, there may be room to apply that Rash and Rashba that hold that it is batel. If you know it's there and it's intact, but can't find it in your chalent, it's not batel because it's a barrier. So the place is melamed zchus on people who eat all sorts of infested food, like flour in the summertime, and he suggests that people are so mech on the rash. The problem is Shulchan Aruch passes against that rash. But the place he says, maybe that's what people are so mech on. That there is such a shita that it's batel be'elef, so maybe that's what they're so mech on. Again, problem is Shulchan Aruch paskins. It's a rejected shita in Shulchan Aruch. We don't paskin that way. But that's limud zchus number one. Limud zchus number two in Mata Yehonasan on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, and Pesachei Tshuva quotes also from the Crazy Place. Another kula for bugs and vegetables. What does he say? Mizei yotzalanu din gadol shatolaim ketanim hamasavim bi ipushe aperos the kolzman shelo pirshu mutarim. Im kein ein kan isur mitchilas priyaso, vilkoch davka l'das harosh anal have a beria, aval anan de kaimlan karash but divinim davka nesur mitchilas priyaso lo mikri beria. He says it could be that these are things that are not asur mitchilas priyaso, because I think we discussed this svara last week, that if you assume that it comes from the vegetable, it was never separated from the vegetable. So even when it does, when it subsequently does separate from the vegetable, but that's not tchilas briyaso anymore. Tchilas briyaso, it was still mutter because it wasn't separated from the vegetable. So that's what Mati Yonason suggests. And then he says, "Miu chas v'shalom lahakel b'zeh," that we shouldn't be mekel. So limud zchus. You always have to be careful when people are melamed zchus. The people who tend to be melamed zchus on certain things that people do wrong are usually the people that do those things wrong. So, you know, I'm not saying the placey, obviously not. I'm saying that, you know, the best kind of limud zchus comes from people who just genuinely want to be melamed zchus and Klal Yisrael, but are personally careful about the halachas. Sometimes people will publish these long essays being melamed zchus on averos that they regularly commit. So, you know, that's you got to take that with a grain of salt if a person's going to be melamed zchus like that. That's agav. Okay, a third potential tzad l'hakel, or not really tzad l'hakel, but let's call it limud zchus, is Gabe Gross pointed out to me that in Rav Henkin Zichrono Levracha, Rav Eitam Henkin Zichrono Levracha, Hashem Yikom Domo, in his book on bugs, you know, he wrote a couple of fascinating books. He was a real kalach, a real special person. I mean, I never met him, but from everything you hear about him, he was a real, real genius and tremendous Talmud Chacham and a real rising star on the Jewish scene. It was a terrible, terrible tragedy. Obviously, anybody being killed, Al Kiddush Hashem, a terrible tragedy, but this was, you know, particular loss for Jewish scholarship. So he wrote a book on really trying to be Melamed Zchus about bugs, trying to be Melamed Zchus on Klal Yisrael. You know, he thought that the world was taken in a certain direction in terms of the level of chumrah that we observe in terms of bugs, and he tried to go through all the shittos and show like what the strict halacha would be, and he has certain haskamos to the Sefer. His other big work was on the Aruch HaShulchan, Taruch Lufanai Shulchan, also very, very nice Sefer. He was a fascinating person. I mean, I never met him, but apparently he was like best friends and worked very, very closely with Rabbi Daniel Kleinman, who is who's the one that wrote Kovetz Halachos. Are you familiar with Kovetz Halachos? Kovetz Halachos is the red svarim from Shmuel Kamenetsky that write up Shmuel Kamenetsky's Piskei Halacha, but you know, on the top it tells you the halacha, what Shmuel Paskin, but he gives you like all the background, goes through the whole sugya. He's got like 10 volumes already. Every yantif, he's got a big fat volume on Shabbos. Really, really also like a rising star in the, he's a Talmud of Philadelphia. He's obviously, he spent a lot of time with Shmuel Kamenetsky. He's a Rav in Brooklyn, I think. And obviously more from the yeshivisha, American yeshivisha scene. And he was like best friends with the Rav Eitan Henkin. How on earth did that ever happen? Because Rav Shmuel was talking to Rabbi Kleinman once, and Rav Shmuel said, oh, Rav Henkin, he was the Gadol HaPoskim in America before Rav Moshe. And Rabbi Kleinman was like, what? Who's that? He never heard him really quoted much. He said, oh, it'd be a huge mitzvah if you can learn more about Rav. So he made it a mission of his to find like every tshuva from Rav Henkin that wasn't published and some that were published and plus his published works and republish them and work on them. And he worked together with Rav Eitan Henkin, who was the grandson of Rav Henkin, Zichron Levracha. So they worked very, very closely together, and they became, and it was two young geniuses, rising stars in their respective worlds, and they just like, it was, you know, like you wonder like what could have happened with a koach like that. Anyway, in his sefer, Gabe Gross pointed out that Rav Nachum Rabinovich has a haskama to the sefer. So Rav Nachum Rabinovich writes that if a bug is so tiny that you wouldn't even notice if it were missing a leg, let's say it weren't a beria, you couldn't tell the difference anyway, then even if you see it moving around, it's not a beria. Meaning, what do we know? If you look at a bug and it looks like a black dot, right? So you're going to say that's a bug? Well, if you see it crawling across the thing, right? You see it running around. Yeah, probably, right? Most poskim would say at that point you're pretty sure that it's a bug, and you're not allowed to eat that. If you see it happens to be a discussion in poskim anyway. If that's true, right? If you see that something is you see it's visible, but you can't see that it's a bug. So that there's tshuvas and poskim about to figure out whether that has been of a bug. But almost everybody says if it's crawling, then it is a bug. We just had a maisa like this in one of the stores in under our hashkacha in the Five Towns, where the proprietor of the store said, he called up the vad, who's angry, like, the mashkiach is crazy, he's making me get rid of this lettuce, there's nothing wrong with this lettuce, there's no problem with it. So one of the rabbanim came down, who has an expertise in this area, and he said, let me see, well, why is he making you crazy? He said, look, this is dirt, it's not a bug. So he took his a pen out of his pocket, he touches it a little bit, and the thing starts running across the thing. He says, still dirt? Still dirt? So, okay, that's it, I'm going to the other Ashkocha. And he did. No one knows that story. We haven't publicized that. No one listens to the Yardei Shir. We're good. We're okay. Rav Nachum Rabinovich suggests the following. He writes, "Vinei kasher yordim besulam achayim." When you go down the ladder of life, magiyim liyitzurim katanim kol kach, you come to such tiny creatures. Sha'ayin roa el some kinukudos dakos bavad, that the eye sees them as just these little dots. Ve'in lahakibem shum simanichius kim tenu bavad. The only way you can see that they're alive is that they're moving. Ve'in roim chito chevarim klal. You don't see any limbs on it. Lo raglayim lo knafayim lo shum chevarim klal. You don't see legs. You don't see wings. Nothing. Va'kol rak nukudos nos ve'alma. It's just these little moving dots. So ech nitan l'kvar shalol shleimim hein. How can you even know if they are shalim or not? So me'ata kol eila safik chaserim hein. So everyone is a safik chaser. It may not be a beria. Ve'in lokos aleihem. Memele gam man yom sheberia ein a betelim neshi chashuv l'malkos ein zol sal beria shenitan l'hakir shi shleima. Even if you say that a beria is ein a betelim and you're going to get malkos for it, that's only if you know that it's shalim. Avalo leila shena melin nukudas dakdikos v'lo yoser veinam agim lios afilu kechatzi chardol, but not for something that's so very tiny. That's his suggestion, that when we say beria ein a betelim, one could be mechalik, right? One could accept him halfway, that when it comes to actually eating a beria, maybe that is called a beria, because maybe it's at least a suffik beria, so suffik daraisa l'chumra. But when it comes to beria ein a betela, where it's a din derabanan, so then maybe there's, if the whole chashash is for such tiny bugs that you would never be able to tell, so then maybe suffik derabanan l'kula. That's his limud zuchus. Again, I would not rely on any of this, but that's the that's limud zuchus number 3 from Rav Nachum Rav Nachum Zuchron.
So already partially addressed one of the points I was thinking about. So a few things. Number one is the suffik daraisa pashas, meaning already just addressed that maybe it's not because dafla tarobas. Point number two is, shouldn't this not be a suffix? It's a suffix in the seas, meaning you could be after Lagura, meaning if I haven't done enough magnifying glass. So I could look at it and see if it has...
So that's the assumption on halach is you don't need to use magnifying glasses. That was the big Brisker Rav or Moshe Feinstein machlokas, right? You familiar with that? Brisker Rav with the ribua of tefillin. That the Brisker Rav said his tefillin were puzzled because he took a microscope or whatever, some sort of very high... what? Whatever it was, to measure, they probably have an app for it on your iPhone. This girl didn't have an iPhone. And he measured that it wasn't exact ribua. And Ramesha said, it's ridiculous. You don't understand why you would need to do that. It just has to look good enough. So Ramesha said the Briskarov must have noticed that something was a little off. And he thought that, and if it was noticeable enough that something was off, and he just used that as his raya. Unclear if that's what the Briskarov really felt. But we assume like Ramesha that you don't need to use whatever appears to the naked eye is what it is, meaning you don't have to use sophisticated instruments in order to determine the halacha. He said Rav Michal Feinstein was the Brisker Rav's son-in-law, right? He was Rav Meisha's nephew. So Rav Michal Feinstein, in Eretz Yisrael they didn't really know Rav Meisha like we did in America. So Rav Michal used to tell the people in Eretz Yisrael, it was like a big chiddush. He would say, the fetter is bigger than the shver, which I don't know. You should say things about your shver in general, but that's what he used to say, that he was bigger than the shver. I have this sefer at home I just got called Moshe Shapir Ka'amrit, like these anecdotes about Rav Moshe Feinstein, written by a Talmud of Rav Aviner. Strange, like why I don't know what it, why he got involved in this, but he's got a lot of fascinating anecdotes. That's what, a little bit about some of the tshuvas and background to the tshuvas. So it's a little thing. I read the whole thing over Shabbos, so it's just like an easy read. One of my talmidim recommended it. So anyway, that's where that story appeared. Yes. So, who's going to ask questions in Zoom now?
The third thing is when it comes to the bug. I mean, once I see enough black dots, so at some point. I should know that
off
you roll, at least one of them is
going to be. Yeah, a good point also. Look, right? That's a good point. If there are a lot of black dots, it's hard to say that, or maybe they're all broken. I mean, especially if they're running around. how many legs could it be missing and still be running around? The Tzvi Letzadik in Simon Kuv Gimel, see if Aleph writes, V'lo eida lama hichmiru kol kach achronim b'simon pei dalid, binyan milbin v'toloi ma'pagumim ba'atzman shalo b'telim, halo b'chei agamna b'telim b'shishim mishum. I have a typo here in my notes. Da ha-rama b'simon kuf gimel kasav, dim einam pagumim einam b'telim, mashva dim pagumim ba'atzman gamberia b'telim. Meaning, they're disgusting, they taste terrible, and therefore they're going to be batel. They're pogum on their own. Or Chashulchan says in Sif Yud Zayin that worms and flies that are disgusting and get lost in the tafshil are in fact batel, because they have a tam pagum. That's not so clear if that's true, that these bugs have a tam pagum. More likely, they don't have a tam at all, right? More likely, you just don't. They don't have any taste. They don't really. Right, you would think if the whole issue is that it's no same time, that would be a problem. But we're not talking about time over here. We're talking about eating the item itself. Yeah, also a good question. Yeah.
Doesn't the Shulchan Aruch explicitly say bugs?
Yeah, but those bugs that don't taste bad. Meaning there are some bugs that are delicious, apparently, and some bugs that maybe are gross. I don't know. Fifth, Sad the Hakel. There's a machlok zaposkim whether chewing on a beria and breaking it up that way takes away the chumra of beria. Chazanish in Simin Yadal Tzivkat Vav is Mekel and says it doesn't make a difference if Nisma'ich b'kadeira machmas chom habishul or Nisma'ich b'piv al yadei li'isa. Meaning, when's the moment that we care if it's a beria? The moment where you put it in your mouth or the moment where you swallow it? So says Chaznish, I don't care when you put it in your mouth. If you were to take a beria, chew it up and spit it out, it would be fine, right? There's nothing wrong with that. The issue would be swallowing it. So as long as it's crushed by the time you swallow it, it should be perfectly fine. Rosham Zalman in Melech Shlom Mechelik Beis Simon Samach Gimel Oz Beis is Machmir because that's Derech Achilaso. If you take a beria and you just eat it in the normal way, so you can't say that that's not a beria anymore. It's of limited application, even if you want to be making like the Chazanish, you know, it could be in a soup. You know, not everything do you chew, and if it's a tiny enough creature, you're not necessarily chewing it up. You're not necessarily crushing it, even when you are chewing it. But another tzad lahakel. And finally, yeah. By the way, the upside down muzzle thing.
I saw you doing it.
Yeah, yeah, it's working. Good job.
Yeah.
I've gotten lots of eitzes. This one's actually okay.
It's still a tzuruf that's tarovas when you're chewing it. Like it's no longer in shishim when you're chewing it, is it?
It's no longer.
If you took a little fork of lettuce and you're biting and chewing up the bug, that bug is no longer in shishim necessarily. It's like.
Oh, meaning if you're going to learn like the Chazanish that the key moment is when you swallow it, shouldn't you play the percentage? Meaning, shouldn't the ratios be based on that moment also? Which leads us to point number six, right? What exactly is the ratio that we're looking for? I don't know. If it's a tiny enough bug, it might even be in shishim when you swallow it. But what's called muchzak bitolayim? So the Mishkanos Yaakov is quoted in the Badei Ashulchan and the Biurim in page Kuv Zayin. It's a famous Mishkanos Yaakov. Rav Shechter likes to quote it all the time. Says that the entire different Mishkanos Yaakov. Mishkanos Yaakov in the Badei Ashulchan is quoted in Badei Ashulchan, the Biurim page Kuv Zayin, says that the entire concept of beria is that it's a davar chashuv. But these tiny little bugs and vegetables aren't even noticed and certainly aren't chashuv to you. The problem with such a Mishkanos Yaakov is that the Shulchan Aruch says, Yerakos mevushalos shenimtzu bem gimel tolaim hayerakos asurin. Apparently, giving the classic example of beria is when you're trying to eat vegetables, you don't see the bugs, but you have to assume that they're there and it's a problem. So that's a difficult limud zchus. Now, if the bug is no longer intact, then it's obviously not a beria. The question is whether you can blend a bug to make it no longer intact, and this we've discussed on several occasions already, right? Ein mevatlin is l'chadchila. It's the third type of ein mevatlin, right? There's sticking iser into heter, there's being marbal of heter, and then there's doing something to undo its to take away its status that prevents the bittel. So if you have nuts of arla and a tarovis that are a davar chashuv and not batel, if you break up the nuts, it's a violation of ein mevatlin. So there's a discussion in poskim whether the same would apply to blending a mixture that has bugs. And the chiluk between the case of the nuts of arla is that in the case of the arla nuts, you're interested in eating the nuts. Over here, you have no interest in eating the bugs whatsoever. I mean, when it came to ein mevatlin, we said that that's a form of ein mevatlin as l'chadchila. I have something that I want to eat, but it's arla, and it's not being batla, so crushing it is called ein mevatlin as l'chadchila. But a bug, I'm not interested in eating the bug. I just want to be able to drink the smoothie. It's just the bugs are in my way. So it could be that crushing those bugs would not be the same type of violation of ein mevatlin as l'chadchila, because you're not trying to be neh neh. from the bugs. You don't want the bugs. You wish they weren't there at all. You're only trying to be nana by the case of the nuts. You wish you could remove these bugs, but you can't. So there are some ashkachas that actually rely on that svara. That's not called ein mevatlin issa l'chachila. Then we have just the metzias issue. What exactly would break apart the bugs? Meaning, what would make a bug no longer shalim? So there's a big discussion in hashkachas. This is one of the issues where Rabbi Heinemann and the OU didn't see eye to eye. There are many issues where Rabbi Heinemann and the OU don't see eye to eye. Obviously, these two hashkachas are headed by Gedolei Haposkim. Rabbi Heinemann is no slouch, to put it mildly, and certainly we know Moreno of Schechter is no slouch. But there was a Metzius issue. Based on the research that the OU had done, they did not think that this was true, but based on the research that Starkei had done, at least years ago, I don't know if they changed their mind, they thought it was true that if you freeze the bugs, I think the way they used to say it is that their eyeballs popped out. Or something like that. There was something that came off of the bug, and therefore they were much more makel with frozen vegetables. You weren't freezing the vegetables because of the bugs. You were freezing the vegetables because you want to sell it as a frozen vegetable. So they were more makel based on that. That they were assuming that the bug is no longer a barrier. I don't know what the metzius is, but that's what they time it. I had a few times where I wasn't sure, you know, where there were like stores where they have, getting a phone call from Opa. There were stores that were selling like bags of lettuce that had like a Starkei hashkacha in it. We don't have it in our Vada Kasha stores because we follow OU policies for the most part. So the OU would not, you know, Dafka when it comes to Tolaim, the Starkei has certain kulas. So I asked Rav Willig, he said, Heinemann is an Adam Gadol, you can rely on. So I think Rabbi Willig's shitos are much more aligned with Rabbi Heinemann on many of the bug issues. Now, the real big issue is what's called Muchsak B'Tolaim. So we said three bugs in a vegetable. What does that mean in a vegetable? So how many vegetables? In a box of vegetables? So Shulchan Aruch and Siman Pei Dalid says that a fruit that is darka lahatliya, you're not allowed to eat it unless you check it for bugs. So that's only if darka lahatliya. The question is, how do you define the term darka lahatliya? Right? Meaning, what fruits and vegetables can I eat without even bothering to check? So on a daraisa level, rove. You only have to check when it's a rove. That rove of the time, that vegetable or that fruit has bugs in it. That's the din on a daraisa level. When it's a miyat hamatsui, then midrabanan you have to check. When it's a miyat she'enu matsui, you don't have to check at all. Right? So this is this applies in many other areas of halacha. There's an hilchos treifos. There are tons of different treifos that can make an animal a treifa, and yet what do we check for? We check the lungs, and that's it. We don't check anything else. They're not checking, you know, the different parts of the brain and the lining around the brain, because those are so uncommon, you don't have to look for them, right? But lungs are holes in the lungs are a common enough issue that we look for them. When it comes to buying a suit and checking for shatness, l'chora the same halacha, right? You get that shaila all the time. Bought a suit, didn't have a chance to check it for shatness yet. Can I wear it? So the best is if you have someone who works with shatness who you can consult with and say, you know, what are the chances that this suit has shatness? Very often someone will tell you, I've checked hundreds of suits of that make, of that, you know, that brand. Never once have I found shatness in one of their suits. Sometimes, you know, you have to know a person is going to be honest with you, because a lot of times you have to realize if someone works in shatness, it's like, you know, that's their thing. So a lot of times people who are very into a particular mitzvah or iser are, you know, will give it, you know, will give it a, you know, more chashivos than, it, you know, or be more machmir about that than necessarily the halacha requires. So a lot of people will just say, what do you mean? How could you wear something without checking for shatness? But if you get someone who's like honest with you, and like, it'll just tell you, just tell me, how many, what are the chances? So if it's a meat chain, so it's very uncommon. Sometimes even price is an indicator. Someone said, I got a new suit. How much did it cost? $150. there's linen in a $150 suit. There's no way they put linen in a $150. There's probably not even wool in a $150 suit. Oh no, but it was a great deal. It was marked down from $350. No one ever paid $350 for that suit. So that's poshness. You would not have to check for shatness. But so how do you define what's called a mira matsui? So the Mishnah Mesechta Basra says that when you buy a martif shel yayin, you're willing to accept 10% of the barrels to be souring already. I mean, you buy this whole warehouse full of barrels of wine, so obviously some of them are not going to be delicious. So how much are you willing to accept? And at what point do you say, no, this is a mekach tovs, that this is not right. There's way more than normal. That's no good over here. So the halacha is 10%. So some of the achronim suggest, and Mishkan Yaakov suggests, that that's the geder of mira matzoi. That's Mishkan Yaakov in Yerdeh Simin Yud Zayin. 10% is mira matzoi. So Rav Shachter quotes this all the time. Rav Heinemann paskins this way as well. 10%. Rav Belsky did not agree with that definition, the halacha. He did not think that there is an exact percentage, and he holds that it's much more subjective to what's commonly infested. So if you wouldn't be surprised to find a bug in a particular vegetable, then that would require checking. You wouldn't expect a bug in your orange, but you would in your Brussels sprouts. So what are the percentages of bugs in oranges? I don't know, but I know that I'm not surprised when I find a bug in my Brussels sprouts. I am surprised when I find a bug in my orange, and therefore I don't have to check my orange, but I do have to check my Brussels sprouts. Rav Eliashiv is quoted as having said that 4% is miyuta matzui. But that just begs the question. Once you're putting a percentage to it, Rabelsky is almost an easier hagdara, because you don't have to put a number to it. Once you're putting a number to it, you have to figure out 10% of what? 4% of what? Of pieces, of portions, of bags, of boxes? So there are five shitos. In the Sefer Bedikas Hamazon Bahalacha, he quotes Rav Eliashiv that it goes by how much you buy at one time. So if you buy, each time you go shopping, you buy 3 bags of lettuce. So if in 10% if 10% of the time that you buy lettuce, that you buy your 3 bags, you'll find a bug within those 3 bags, then that's called 10%, because that's what you buy at one time. That's very difficult to understand. What do you mean you buy at one time? Some vegetables you'll buy a lot more because they last longer. Some people buy a lot more because their family is on a health kick and they're all eating salad. Some people have very large families. Some people have very small families. Very difficult to understand what that means. You buy at one time. But what he's trying to say is it doesn't go by the meal. Meaning you're going to buy a bunch, you know, for several meals worth. You're not going to go to the store every time you want to buy more lettuce. That's what they quote from Rav Eliashiv. Rav Shlomo Zalman said it depends on how it's packaged. Also very difficult to understand. Why should the company get to determine what's called a mira matzoi, what's not? So they decide they're packaging it in bags of a particular size. So then 10% of bags, if 10% of a bag of lettuce has a bug, that's already a mira matzoi. Also difficult to understand. Rav Shachter holds it depends on the serving. What would a person eat at one time? So in one serving of salad, is there a 10% chance that it will have bugs in it? Rabbi Willig thought it goes by the bite. So it's a significant kula. That if you take 10 bites, one out of every 10 bites has a bug in it, then it's called a mira matzoi. Less than that is not a mira matzoi. That is a significant kula. And in case you think you can't be more makel than that, Razam Nechemya Goldberg, as a Zichron Levracha, held that it goes by the pieces. Meaning, if it's rice, if you don't have one bug for every 10 pieces of rice, then you're fine. That's wild. So what do we generally assume? I think we generally probably assume more like Rabbi Belsky. Meaning, we generally assume that if it's the kind of thing that's known to be a vegetable that is likely to have bugs, so then we have to check for it. And if it's the kind of thing that would be so out of left field to have bugs, generally then we wouldn't check for it. I just want to spend a little bit of time on Beria as far as Hilchos Brachos is concerned as well, and then maybe compare Hilchos Brachos to Yerideh a little bit, and then we'll move on to the next Siddur Bez Hashem tomorrow. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Lam and Chesem Beis, going over to Lam Tesem Adal, tells us as follows. Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Yochanan hechi mevarich al zayis meliach. Kiven de shakil lagarine batzel leshira. How could Rabbi Yochanan say a bracha achrona on a zayis meliach? He ate an olive and he said a bracha achrona. After all, it's less than a kazayis. What do you mean a zayis is less than a kazayis? It sounds ridiculous. You know, there are those that have very machmir shirim of kazayis. There's a book of popular foods and how much of each popular food is a kazayis. Like how many Twizzlers is a kazayis? How many, you know, so I remember it was a little funny. You turn to the page on the book of olives. How many olives is a kazayis? And it said three large olives equals a kazayis. And you're thinking like, that can't be, right? That doesn't sound. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan was eating a zayis, and he's, but it's pachas mikazayis. Why does the Gemara assume it's pachas mikazayis? Because it's you don't eat the pit. So shakalei legarinise, if you take out the pit, the flesh of the olive is pachas mikazayis, because the shear of a zayis is the volume of a whole olive. So if you actually eat an olive, you're eating pachas mikazayis. So how is he allowed to say a bracha achrona? That really the shear of a kazayis is a kazayis beinoni. Rabbi Yochanan ate a very large zayis, so even when he took out the pit, the amount of fruit that he ate was a kazayis beinoni. Was the shear of a kazayis beinoni. That's the Bavli's answer. That Rabbi Yochanan said a bracha achrona an olive, even though he couldn't have eaten the pit because he was eating a very large olive, so the fruit itself was a kazayis. Tosfos in Maseches Brachos points out that the Yerushalmi asks the same question and gives a different answer. Yerushalmi says he said a bracha achrona even though it was smaller than a kazayis because it was a beria. And you say a bracha achrona when you eat a beria. So is the Bavli assuming not like the Yerushalmi because he didn't give that answer? If it's assuming not like the Yerushalmi, is it because he didn't eat the pit so he didn't really eat a beria? Or is it assuming there's no such din of beria by bracha achrona? And what even is a beria? Well, that we discussed already, right? How to be magdir a beria. But maybe in Hilchos Brachos, the gedder is a little bit different, right? Certainly not brias neshama, if we're talking about a zayis. So Tosfos assumes the Bavli is against the Yerushalmi, and when Bavli is against the Yerushalmi, passing like the Bavli, that's the riff at the end. The question is, why are we passing like the Bavli? Right, the riff at the end of Erevin says, because of Hilchos Kabasra'a, that the Bavli came later than the Yerushalmi, so they knew everything that had already said in the Yerushalmi. Okay, other opinions as well, question historically whether the riff is correct, but we passing like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi. The Beis Yosef in Siman Reish Yud and Or HaChaim points out that the Rambam and the Rif make no mention of Beria in Hilchos Brachos, and therefore it must be that we pass like the Bavli. It's Machlokes Bavli Yerushalmi, we pass like the Bavli. The Or Sameach in the fifth paragraph of Hilchos Brachos suggests that the Bavli and Yerushalmi are actually Lishitasam. The Yerushalmi never mentions requiring a Kedei Sviya to be Chayiv in Birchas HaMazon min HaTorah. Must be that the Yerushalmi holds that kezayis or kebetza, you're already chayiv in birchas hamazon min haTorah, and that's why the Yerushalmi says that you're mesubik if you're benched, we go lechumra, never considering that it would make a difference if you ate less than a kedei sviya. So a beria is dino kezayis. So according to the Yerushalmi, it's going to be chayiv in birchas hamazon min haTorah. So that's what the Yerushalmi is saying. The Rabbi Yochanan is chayiv in birchas hamazon min haTorah. Because if he ate a beria, then it has a din of a kazayis, and a kazayis is chayiv in birchas hamazon min haTorah. Bavli holds, says Yosef Mech, that a kazayis is drabanan, only a kedei sviya is daraisa, because that's the Gemara in Brachos Daf Chaf. The Gemara says, v'chilo es apanam li Yisrael, should Kodesh Baruch Hu says, shouldn't I show favoritism to Klal Yisrael, shekasafti lem betorah v'echalta v'savata v'rachta Hashem alkecha. I write in my Torah that v'echalta v'savata v'rachta Hashem alkecha. V'heim etakim al-atma ha-kazayis et kebeitza, they're willing to say a bracha achron even for a kazayis or a kebeitza. So whether kazayis, there's a machlokas, whether kazayis im shtia or kebeitza is the definition of a savata, that's only an asmachta, but really it's only the savata. So there's no din that a beria is like a kedei sviya. At most, a beria is like a kazayis. A beria is not like a kedei sviya. So maybe they were never misakin that you say a bracha achron on a beria. So again, if you hold that kedai, that when you eat a kazayis, you chayiv in bichsam mazal midar raisa, so I understand that the rabbanon are going to say that since a beria has a din like a kazayis for other halachos midar rabbanon, you're going to have to say bracha achron on a beria as well. But if you hold that even the very din that you say bracha achron on kazayis is itself only a din to rabbanon, so the rabbanon aren't going to come and make a takana that a beria, because in other areas of halacha, as far as machalos asuros has a din like a kazayis, so the rabbanon aren't going to make another din that that we treated in terms of bracha achrona like a kazayis. So that's what the Or Sameach suggests, that it's a bavli and yerushalmi l'shitasam. Anyway, that is Tosus. Tosus assumes that it's a machlokas bavli yerushalmi, and we pass like the bavli. End of story. Therefore, there's no concern when you eat a beria. When you eat a fruit, that is a beria. However, Tosus quotes another shita that the bavli and the yerushalmi agree. But the bavli assumes you remove the pit, so it's not a beria. Whereas the yerushalmi assumed he ate the whole thing, that he ate it shalim. So he just ate a kazayas that was smaller than a kazayas. What does that mean exactly? How do you eat the pit? So that's also a discussion in the Rishonim. The Rashba in Maseches Brachos is even more explicit than Tosos, and he says Yerushalmi assumes that they ate the pit, and it seems to be the Shita of the Raman, Siman Reish Yud Sif Aleph as well, and the Grub points out that he got it from the Rashba, but there are different understandings of the Rashba also. The Magen Avraham in Reish Yud Sif Kandal says if you suck out the inside of the garin, it's a beria. But nobody actually eats the garin. It can't mean that. It can't mean that he actually ate the pit. It means he sucked out whatever juices were in the pit. The Prima Gadim in the Sefer Rosh Yosef on Maseches Brachos says you have to put the entire olive in your mouth and then spit out the pit. Meaning what they're struggling with is the Gemara had a kasha, right? Why did he say bracha achrona? He ate a zayis, and a zayis is pachas mikazayis. Why was the Gemara assuming a zayis is pachas mikazayis? Obviously, it was working with that assumption that that he wasn't eating the pit, and also a pit's totally not edible. So what do you mean, beria shiny? He can't eat the pit. He didn't eat the pit. So what do you mean, beria shiny? So the Rashba says he did eat the pit. Question is, what does he mean he ate the pit? So the Magen Avraham says, what does it mean? It means he sucked out the juices from the pit. The Prima Gadim says, no, it means that he put the whole thing in his mouth, not like the Chazon Ish, right? That the definition of beri is when you put it in your mouth, not what goes down your throat, not what you swallow. So he put the whole thing in his mouth, and then he spit the pit out, so it was a beri when he was eating it. The Tel Torah, Rameir Arik, points out that the pit would be Ha'adama. So it wouldn't be mitztarif to the shir kazayis anyway. So it must be that the Bavli is assuming beria also, because even with the pit, you wouldn't have a kazayis of ha'etz. So he says, not machlokes Bavli Yerushalmi, because you have to assume beria anyhow, because even with the pit, lechora it shouldn't be a kazayis. And the Bavli says, if he had a kazayis that was a regular sized kazayis, because he took out the pit, it's pachas mikazayis. Says the Tel Torah, even with the pit, it's pachas mikazayis. So it must be that the Bavli is assuming the din of beria also. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, the pit shouldn't be necessary to make it a beria. It's inedible. The Bavli is assuming it's maliach, it's a kazayis maliach. And that takes away its status as a beria. Remember we said that if something gets cooked, it very likely disintegrates. So maliach kiroseach, when something gets pickled or salted for a long time, maybe that takes away the status of a beria. And the Yerushalmi is assuming that it's raw. Yerushalmi didn't say kazayis maliach, so the Rabbi Yochanan ate kazayis. And therefore, if it's raw, it's a beria. But in principle, the Bavli would agree that there is a din of beria, even by bracha achrona, it's just that it happened to be that the Bavli was assuming it's a kazayis maliach. That answer is already found in Rishonim. The Rav Yon, Simon Kuf Zayin, says that same answer. Rav Yaakov Emden was mechavin to that. The Rush in Simon Tazayin and Maseches Brachos over there says that if it's brought in front of you whole, it's a beria. But if it's de-seeded before it's brought in front of you, then it's not a beria. And that might be the difference between Bavli and Shalmi. Meaning the Bavli may be assuming it's not a beria because maybe the way it was presented to him was not a beria. But the Bavli may still agree to the din that it's a beria. And Rabbeinu Yonah in Bracha says it depends if it's the derech to eat the garin or not. Our Gemara assumes it's not the derech, so you need a shear aside from the garin. Darkei Moshe is not sure how to determine that, right? In some ratio, Darkei Moshe says, how do you determine what's the derech? Rov b'nei Adam? Or is it determined by the individual that it's his derech to eat the garin? He's not sure. What emerges is that there are five definitions, really, of beria as far as bracha achrona. I mean, if you assume that the Babli does not argue in the Yerushalmi, and you're therefore going to assume that there is a din of bracha achrona and a beria, there are five different definitions of what even is a beria. The Gra, within his understanding of the Rashba, is they have to actually eat the pit in order for it to be a beria. The Prima Gadim, in his understanding of the Rashba, you have to put it in your mouth, but you can spit it out. The Magen Avraham, you have to suck out the edible part of the pit. The Rush, it depends how it's brought in front of you. And Rabbeinu Yonah, that only fruits that it's normal to eat the pit can be considered a beria. So even the definition of a beria is tricky. Now, in most cases, you're not going to have that, right? I mean, if you eat a grape, it's a beria, right? It fits well. The only time you have a difficulty is if it's something like an olive that has a pit inside of it. So how do you chesh bin the pit in terms of, that it happens to me, the Gemara's case was an olive. But if you hold that the Babli agrees with the Yerushalmi in principle, that a beria is nogea to bracha achrona, so then there are a lot of things that are a beria. So how do we, and that don't have pits. So how do we paskin? In Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Yud Si'if Aleph, V'yesh mistap gimlomar, shal davrshu kibriyaso, kigon gargar shal anav, o shal rimon, shemervorchin achra la'achrav, afal bishen bokazai. Some are mesupa can think that maybe you need a bracha achrona and a beria. One grape, one pomegranate piece. Lekach nachon li zoher shelo lechol beria pachas mikazayis. And therefore, says Ramah, don't do it. If you're going to eat grapes, eat a bunch. If you're going to eat pomegranate seeds, eat a bunch of pomegranate seeds. I'm not sure why each seed is a beria when it comes to a pomegranate, as opposed to the whole pomegranate. They all grow inside of the pomegranate, but that's what the assumption seems to be. The Ramah then adds, "V'lo mikri beria elim achlu kamosha hu, avil mlakach hagar mimenu lo mikri beria." That if it's something that has a pit and you take out the pit, that's not called a beria. So the Mishnah Brura says that it really doesn't make a difference if the seed is edible or not. Removing the pit, even if it's inedible, takes away the beria status. And he explains in Sharet Zion that even though that's a machlokas, we just discussed, right? We just discussed by the Alder that's a machlokas. He says, yeah, but it's also a machlokas where there's a din of beria by bracha achrona anyway. So it's a svek svek ala halacha. Maybe there's no din of beria by bracha achrona. And even if you want to tell me that removing an inedible pit, some say doesn't ruin its status of a beria, but others say it does ruin its status of a beria. So svek svek ala halacha. That's what he explains in Sharet Zion. Maybe we pass like the Ram and the Rif anyway, that the whole din of beria doesn't apply to bracha achrona. Mishmaru also points out in Sivkat Mechas over there in Siman Reish Yud that when things get cooked, they often lose a little bit of their substance, and that would seem to suggest that a raisin is not a beria, because if it's shriveled down and lost some of its substance, so maybe that would not be considered a beria. However, Rav Vosner and Shevet Alevi, Cheleches, Simelam Adalid, is not so sure about the raisin, and he says, Misha Mekel Bezeh in Maznichem also, but he'd rather you not be Mekel. Rav Nissim Karelitz, in Chut Shani, Shabbos Chelek Beis, page Shin Aleph, even if you already ate a beria, he says, don't eat another one, unless it will put you over the Shir Kazayas. Because even though you're already besafik bracha, you're putting yourself into a further safik bracha. What does that mean? So there are two possibilities. One is that, how big is a kazayas? So maybe we're being overly machmir what a kazayas is. So, I mean, don't eat another one that's going to, you know, that will put you in a gray area of whether it's a kazayas. Because then you're just creating more safik brachas. Or, he's saying, that if you hold that a beria requires a bracha achrona, it's a violation of not saying a bracha achrona on each beria that you don't say a bracha achrona on. So how could you eat something that might require a bracha achrona when you're not going to then make a bracha achrona? So to eat that second pomegranate seed, if you're not going to finish, there are only two left in that little container. You know, they sell those containers of pomegranate. There are only two left. So don't eat those two, because you don't know that even after eating, even if you ate one already, don't eat the second one, says Rav Nissim Karelitz, because you know that you're eating it without being able to say a bracha achrona on it. A little bit of a chiddush, because you would imagine that it's one big chiyuv of bracha achrona. So it wouldn't make a difference once you already know you're not saying a bracha achrona. The simple eitzah that they suggest in the Sefer Vezos HaBracha, he quotes from Rav Eliyashiv. Of course, in Sefer Vezos HaBracha, he never actually quotes from Rav Eliyashiv. He just says, Echad Migdolei Adar. Are you familiar with the Sefer Vezos HaBracha? They now have a second volume. 30 years later, he did it like hashlamos of things that he forgot to write in the first volume. So he writes in the introduction to the first volume that he has a lot of Piskei Halacha from Rav Eliyashiv, but Rav Eliyashiv didn't want to be quoted in the Sefer. So anytime he quotes Rav Eliyashiv, he just calls him Echad Migdolei Adar. So, okay, as long as you read the introduction, you know that Echad Migdolei Adar is Rav Eliyashiv. So every time, there's no one else that's called Echad Migdolei Adar in the Sefer. So Mezos HaBrach, he quotes Echad Migdolei Adar from Rav Eliyashiv. And for Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul, and that's explicit in the Tshuva, in the Yarl Tzion, Chelek Beis, Parak Yudalid, Os Chavchas, just take a bite out of the grape. Or cut it before you say the bracha, and then it's not going to be a barrier issue. What about for mitzvos? Can you be yotze a mitzvah with a barrier, pachas mikazayis? So we don't really have too many mitzvahs achila, certainly not d'oraisa nowadays, but we do have a mitzvah achila midrabanan that relates to a barrier, or that relates to something that grows from the ground and would be eligible to be a barrier, right? Matzah is not going to be a barrier, because there's no such, it's man-made, right? It's like saying a donut is a barrier. It doesn't make any sense, right? So what's going to be a barrier? A leaf of lettuce might be a barrier for marah. So what, normally when you try to make sure you're having gzayis and marah, you try to take a couple of big leaves or one very big leaf. That's what normally I tell people, is one very big leaf is a very safe gzayis. What about one little tiny leaf? But it's a barrier, it's a whole leaf. So the Mishnah Brura in Siman Taf Ayin Hey in Hilchos Pesach in Sivkot Yud Beis says absolutely not. He says, because what's the whole point? The whole point of a barrier is that it gives it a certain chashivus, but by marah the whole point is that, meaning, and for bracha you want to give hodah l'Hashem that you had a davar chashiv, that you ate a davar chashiv. So the hodah l'Hashem is going to be if you eat a barrier also. But by marah, the whole point is a zecher to vayimaru es chayayim. So it's not a proper zecher if you didn't eat enough of it. It's only accomplished when you eat a kazayis. What emerges is that there are a number of potential differences between beria, even if it does exist in Hilchos Brachos, between beria in Hilchos Brachos and beria in Yeridea. The Gemara Makos Daf Yizayin we discussed last week, that Rabbi Shimon holds that you can be chayiv on a kol shu of tevel because it's a beria, but the Chum say, no, why not? Because various neshama. So, okay, we had the question. Rishonim, is that accepted lamaskana? That only a various neshama. So that's the machlokas Rishonim. But we pass it in Shulchan Aruch that only a various neshama is called a beria. So that should immediately disqualify anything you're ever going to say a bracha achrona on. All the cases of bracha achrona are grapes and olives and pomegranate seeds. None of them are various neshama. So a clear difference in Shulchan Aruch between Yeridea and Arachayim. The requirement of a Berius Hashem is only a Yeridea requirement. Clearly, the Yerushalmi assumes, and perhaps the Bavli also, that for Brachos, you don't need the Chachamim standard for Beria. Also, the Prima Gadim and Simon Reish Yud and Arachayim and Eshal Avram Sivkat and Dalit says that according to the Rosh, it depends how it's brought in front of you, but maybe that's only true by Hilchos Brachos, not by Yeridea. By your idea, maybe depend on putting it in your mouth and not how it's brought in front of you. Also, Rav Sacks Shlita, Rav Yonason Sacks Shlita, in his Sefer Orchos Yamin on Birchas Hanenin, page Kuf Mem Hei, he has a whole long piece about Beria, says certainly Rabbeinu Yonah, that anything with inedible parts can't be a Beria, is definitely not true about your idea. How do you know it's definitely not true about your idea? Right, the Rabbeinu Yonah, there's an inedible seed, so therefore it can't be a beria because there's an inedible part to it. That's definitely not true for Yeridea. Why not? What were the cases we had in the Gemara of a beria? Giran Asha, give me an even better one, even stronger ayah. Kuf Beis. The tzipor, right? A little bird. A bird has a beak. A bird has like toenails. There are things that are bones. There are parts of the bird that are certainly not not edible. Chulin kufbeis, an oftame is a beria. even though it includes bones, a beak, feathers. Feathers are not edible. So those are some of the differences. What it has in common is like Rav Soloveitchik's geder, that a berry is an isur tzura rather than an isur chomer, so similar svara to brachos, that it has a tzura of an entire entity. So that's that's enough. But the geder is not going to be the same. So it's not really an application of the din. It's almost saying that there are other ways of measuring chashivus other than chomer. And that is through tzura, and that principle might carry over to Hilchos Brachos. But the actual Gedarim don't seem to really hold true from Yaradeya to Hilchos Brachos. Okay, I'm sorry for going a little over time. We'll stop there. Bezhem, tomorrow we'll move on. Simon Koval, Chaticha Ruyu Leskabe, Leibedik. Okay.